And good evening. This is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And tonight, this should be actually a really great show because over the holidays, I had an opportunity to read the Cosmic Weather Report by Mark Borax and Elias Lonsdale. And I have to say that it was riveting at some points, and I guess very exciting just to hear, you know, that all of the stuff that I've been going through hasn't been for vain. Because I tell you, but we're going to get into that. But welcome, Mark.
Hi, Lori. It's great to be back on your show.
It's always great to have you. So, okay. So this was kind of an instrumental book. I mean, it talks about a lot of different things. It goes into a lot of different topics. But I guess what I really liked was, you know, the fact that it talked about, you know, the shadow stuff and, you know, all the stuff that a lot of us have been going through that have really, you know, it's really there for a reason. We're being, you know, guided, even though it feels like we're going deeper in the muck sometimes, that we're being guided to assist us to move out.
Yes, that was definitely, yes, it's both move in and out, but that is a very strong theme of the book, that the most intense and difficult and dark things that are happening right now actually are in service of a tremendous transformation for the good, but it takes a lot of digging down into the soul in order to really see it that way.
Yeah. So the book was divided into three sections, and the first one was really about understanding the crossroad and understanding the identities that we've been kind of holding on to, which I think is brilliant. I love the, you know, the secret identity that we're superheroes with amnesia.
Thank you.
And
I definitely had fun with that one.
Yeah, I bet you did.
Well, I was striving to find a way to present the extent of how artificial we become in a creative way that could actually inspire people to do something with it.
Right. And, you know, we're in, for a lot of people, and regardless, we've kind of gotten into this very dense karmic world, and it has a lot to do with the fact that we're on the cusp of moving into the age of Aquarius, which means we had to first go through the age of Pisces. And why don't you talk a lot about that? Because it's fascinating how the two ages are coming together, but the fact that, you know, what we had to go through, because Pisces is a very spiritual sign, and yet, you know, the age of Pisces led us into a very interesting direction. So talk about that.
A lot of things happened in the last 2,000 years since the age of Pisces began, and not all of them were negative, and not all of them can be easily summed up as what we're leaving behind. But in general, what's happened in this time period more and more is that the truth of the individual got co-opted by the power-hungry pressure of the masses, of the collective, of the groups, of the small groups, let's say, not really the masses. And little by little, more and more, a human individual's ability to stay with what they're doing and why they're doing it in a fulfilling manner got poisoned by this whole other way to be, until we created a Piscean stew, a karmic gumbo of swirling around in the modern state with no real, strong, clear direction or code or clarity. And that is one of the main developments in the last 2,000 years that's up in our faces, confronting us now big time while we get ready to leave that age behind and move on to something else.
Right. And so why was it necessary? I mean, I think it was really well discussed in the book, but why was it necessary that we had to go so far down in the muck in that stew to get ourselves up? It seemed to be, something to do with the fact that, you know, in other times we've always kind of gone up and out, and the Piscean age was to bring us down and really ground us into this world.
Yes, exactly. The benefit of having gotten so pressurized down in the bottom of the karmic stew is that it's made of us formidable characters who have a kind of fiber, a kind of toughness that wants that fiber and toughness at that deep level ignites a soul force, a guiding consciousness, a powerful awakening, then we can make something of the human journey that we would not have ever been able to achieve had we remained lighter, less pressurized, sort of floating around on the top of existence without getting to the bottom of it.
And so we kind of got addicted to the illusion of this trance of normalcy.
Yes, very, very much so. And I spend quite a bit, I spend an interesting amount of time in the beginning of the book really presenting the trance of normalcy to people, which is something I mentioned in my first book as well, but I went further into it in this book, that normalcy is a sick trance. It is the drug of choice of the modern age. Just to be alive and functioning in a normal, mundane world is a heavy, heavy drug. So heavy that we don't even know that we're in it. It's a pressurizing state that people conform to, thinking that they're doing the right thing. And what we do in the beginning of this book, the first section that you mentioned, Stirring the Soul of the Species, is exactly that. We're stirring the illusion. We're mucking with normalcy. We're turning it around and saying, look at who you are and what you're doing and what you're trying to do. Is this really the world that you're choosing to co-create by your actions and your thoughts? Is this the life that you're intended to live? And that trance of normalcy is now becoming upended by the amount of changes and transformation that's going on in the world, similar to what happened in the 1960s, but on a much broader level.
Right. Except we're sort of, we don't seem to have that power that the 60s had. We don't seem to have that zest where everybody is joining together yet. We're sort of all... It's like we all are aware, but we're not all coming together quite yet.
Yes, and I don't think it's going to happen quite that way anyway, even though this is the very early stage of it now. We're sort of like in 1963, which was another year of the cat, like 2011 is going to be soon the year of the cat. And in the early part of the 1960s, the 60s weren't really yet the 60s. They weren't that distinguishable from the 1950s, but they became much, much different very soon after that. I do think we're in the early stages of a revolution, and yet it's not going to look and feel quite the way it did in the 1960s, because the times have really changed since then, and something else is needed now. But I think that the common denominator that's similar to both the 1960s revolution and the one that's just now beginning is an awakening that the way that we've been doing things is bankrupt, is bogus, is false, is over, is done. And even if many, many parts of society have not yet gotten that, it's soon going to sweep everywhere and ignite a corresponding hunger and thirst for something better. At the same time, as you know from having recently read the book, it's not only going to ignite a hunger and thirst for something better, it's also going to ignite a lot of fear and paranoia. It's both. It's we're entering a period that will shake things up, and it doesn't yet feel like that us versus them solidarity that was so powerful in the 60s, because it's not quite so polarized. In the late 1960s in Stratford, Connecticut, where I was living at the time, if you were hitchhiking and you saw a Volkswagen bus, you dropped your thumb because you had a ride, and there was no question about it. If a Volkswagen bus was coming, you got your ride. And if they had long hair, they smoked pot and they were against the war. And if it was a Chevrolet and they had short hair, they were for the war in Vietnam and they drank booze and they did not smoke pot. And the sheer polarization of the 1960s between us and them, the old ones and the young ones, the juicers and the pot smokers and the hawks and the dove, that polarization was part of what made the solidarity feel so intense and uplifting. But it's not quite, our times are not quite as simple nor as polarized as simply now as they were then. It's we're living in a subtler, more complicated time, and so the corresponding wave of change is taking a subtler, more complicated form in its early stage as it grows, and it's not going to quite feel like things did in the 60s. Therefore, it's up to us to really create and find this revolution in subtler ways, and in some cases in much deeper ways than happened in that earlier time.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Talk about how Star Genesis, which is the way you both do astrology, can assist to create this bridge. I know that, you know, astrology on its own, you know, it's so varied, but what you both do is very unique.
Yes, and Elias Lonsdale, who is my co-writer for this book, Cosmic Weather Report, discovered in the 1970s a whole other system of astrology through a dream that he had. And in this system, Star Genesis, the normal Western astrological birth chart becomes a springboard for the soul. It becomes a way to open a conduit directly to the inside of a human being. And this is what we need more radically than anything else at this time now, is a direct tunnel to our truth, to our creativity, to our inspiration, to our spark, to our passion, to our power, to our sexuality. And Star Genesis is a way to look at a birth chart and dial in the core nature of a human being in such a way that you present to them a soul-level portrait of who they are on the deepest level, why their soul chose to come here, what they're doing on Earth, how they can do that, and what gets in the way of it.
Yeah, I mean, I've had, you know, I've been blessed to have had a reading with you, and I do know that, you know, you can really see into just a deeper picture than I'd ever understood before. And I think it was very interesting, and certainly how our shadow side plays a role, and how we have to, whether we embrace it or come to terms with it and accept it, but the finding that weave so that we bring it all together, so that we can understand why our soul chose a certain path.
Yes, and that hits the nail on the head, Lori, because in my soul-level astrology readings and in the Cosmic Weather Report book, both, we make a very, very strong case that your deepest, darkest, most difficult dilemmas, struggles, and challenges are not something that incidental or random that shouldn't be. It's actually the best chance that you have turning around the modern trance of normalcy, getting back to your clear inner truth and making a life of it.
Mm-hmm. And you're also weaving in some of the work of,
Rudolf Steiner?
Yes, Rudolf Steiner, sorry. And I think when he wrote it, he didn't weave it into astrology. You've done that, correct?
He did do astrology.
He did.
And in fact, Star Genesis is strongly influenced by Rudolf Steiner's astrology.
That's fascinating. I thought it was very interesting how all of those, the different ways and how it connected with the signs to understand it. I don't want to get too sidetracked on that, although it is in your book. How do like, you look at your sun sign, but would you look at the other signs as well that are in your chart that are to look at Rudolf Steiner's work or to look at how the 12 senses play in your life?
Yeah, the appendix that you're talking about, it correlates the 12 signs of the zodiac with the 12 senses discovered by Rudolf Steiner. And those senses are just another way to dial in Star Genesis, to connect with a powerful adventure of discovery. A soulful existence. One way to do it is through the senses. Each of the 12 signs of the zodiac is also a sense. Rudolf Steiner discarded the theory of five senses, which came to us from the ancient Greeks, and said, why is there arbitrarily only five senses? Who said there has to be just five senses? It's just a way that we've come to look at things that to him seemed obsolete already 100 years ago, because that's when he lived, 100 years ago. And he found 12 senses that he associated with the signs of the zodiac. And so in the appendix at the back of the book that you're talking about, you can read the sense that's connected to your sun sign. If you're an Aquarius or if you're an Aries, you can read that sign, as well as you can read the other signs. And it just gives you another creative dimension to work on so that you can get in touch with your deeper identity, your deeper powers, your deeper truth. The senses are one very strong way to do that. And so I added that as one of the three appendices.
Mm. Okay, so let's look at the steps. We're still in, like, part one, because part one really is the major piece of your book, I think, anyway, because it goes into the intricacies of everything that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So step one is about recognition and how we hold ourselves back and becoming more aware of what we're doing.
And that step is very important, because until somebody reckons with how far off truth their life has gotten, they can't really yet begin to know what needs to be put in order to get back on track. So it's a crucial step to just get it, to wake up and get it, that, oh, wow, my life isn't really my life. I'm not actually living my truth. I'm not really fully being the person that I know that I am inside. And to have that moment of recognition without immediately jumping off into all the millions of reasons why, like because you don't have $1 million, you can't be who you are, because your next-door neighbors is a creep, you can't be who you are, because you're married to a man who doesn't fully understand you and isn't spiritual, you can't have your life. Without even going into all the reasons and excuses why you're not fully living that powerful inner dream, the first step is just to recognize if you're not. And if you're not, then to have a moment, to have a real moment that grants you yourself the power to change that. So that's what we're talking about with that first step.
And there's something in it that unless you're, you know, loving your life with radical joy, you are not fully in where you want to be.
Yes, and that's the underlying premise of this. It's not that every single minute of your life needs to be harmonious and pleasant, and until that happens, you're somehow off track. even when you are living a life of radical joy, there can be intense challenges and difficulties. However, there's a very big difference. The difference between somebody living a life of radical joy who has incredible difficulties and most other people who are not leading lives of radical joy and have difficulties is that the person who's fully living their truth is engaging the right difficulties, the ones that hone their soul into a cutting-edge instrument for transformation, love, for truth, for deep compassion for the way that the world has become. And the person who is not aligned with their truth, not living a life of radical joy, their difficulties and their challenges go around and around and around like endless nagging hassles that don't actually ever get them off the treadmill.
Yeah. And step two is about, you know, finding this integrated consciousness, because mostly we're living our lives in very much in separation, and we're not seeing, I mean, we're coming to the place where we're knowing that there is a connection. We know that we can create that connection at some times, but most of our lives are not living as interconnected beings.
It's a very important step, Lori, because once you realize how you're not lined up with your true life, self-judgment is going to come crashing in on you, or judgment of everyone else. You'll either get cynical and get down on others, or you'll get down on yourself. And so step two, very important, is developing an integrated consciousness that sees things whole rather than fragmented, that feels an experience of the unity of all things, and therefore begins to ease out of the person's energy field and consciousness all of those thought forms that work to create separations and separations.
Yeah. And that we're really going through a death and rebirth. And as it says in the book, death really isn't that easy.
Yep. The collective world organism is dying. Our species is dying because that version of it couldn't go on any longer. We've become Neanderthals. We've outlived our usefulness and are capable of morphing out of that old dead snake skin and wriggling free into a new shape, into a new being. And that's the death that is tremendously gripping the species right now, with a lot of the things that go along with death, like fear and resistance and freak out. Mm-hmm. It's also a sign that we're ready to change, that the transformation is imminent, that we can no longer hold back something in us that we have yet to be and have yet to discover.
Yeah. And you talk about the sacred fire that we have within us to help us, you know, with that, but we all kind of distract ourselves with this aching numbness that you talk about as well. Like we're all trying to, I guess that's the normalcy part, that we're all trying to just be, I don't know, trying to get through instead of just trying to get through the day instead of actually really living.
It's a waste of potential. And that way of being is exactly what's dying. So the numbness, the apathy, the sense that what can one little person do against the enormous difficulties that are particular to our modern age, the feeling of futility, of helplessness, that is a soul state. It's an inner condition. If you put a thermometer into the collective organism of humanity now, it will read that there's a sick soul state, that the soul state has sickened. And yet, there's a deeper story than that, which is that everything that's happening can also be recognized as a tremendous wake-up call that couldn't yet wake up the depths of the human being until things got this pronounced, until things became this dramatized.
Right. And we're also, which is part of number three, learning to strip away our attachments. That has to go, because that's also part of this world, the old world that we've created.
Yes, when you learn to see things whole and begin to feel the integration that all things are part of everything else, when you have a direct personal experience of that, then it becomes more clear to you when you're cramming yourself into your limited shape once more out of fear and attachment, rather than living up to that deeper truth.
Yeah. There's also a lot of talk about how we're getting a lot of help this time, where a lot of the children, and I'm sure you know that firsthand, are really integral in the evolution that we're moving towards.
And the children have always been, in every generation, the teachers of the parents, the instruments for bringing the parents through their delusions. And now, more than ever, because there's an innocent, virginal, nascent quality to human beings that has to be given its chance to prosper. We can no longer sustain a world culture on the pretense that we are these competent mechanical beings who are keeping it all lubricated, and the gears are turning and the cogs are turning and the paycheck's coming week after week and the pennies are adding up and we're paying our mortgage and everything's going along and it's really working. The children are here to stop us in our tracks with the reminder of the ecstatic adventure that life is in the physical plane when you awaken to it without getting hooked by it. The children are here to remind us that life is this endlessly thriving adventure, to find out what each day has for you, to bring something of your trembling soul out into existence as an offering with that intensity of the child that this moment, what's happening, is the only thing that ever happened in the whole history of the universe, that part of the childlike consciousness can catalyze this awakening inside the human being who's walking around as if they're jaded and washed up and used up and exhausted, and everybody's carrying this story that they're exhausted and that it's all too much and they're not going to be able to ever put it together, and their relationships are no longer working, and the whole money thing is no longer working, and politics are no longer working, and that whole endless litany is an innocent, bright species pretending to be jaded, helpless, and exhausted until the pretense actually serves its purpose, which is to catalyze something deeper than that inside each human being.
The book also talks about the recently passed and how they're also here assisting us.
Yes, the presence of other beings, other dimensions, other realms, is one of the main features of shifting from the Piscean age to the Aquarian age. And in this shift, there are many more subtle dimensions, subtle presences, invisible beings, becoming not so kooky, not so much relegated to the fringes, not just some hearsay, but actual allies, forces we can work with. The dead are not gone but just vibrating in a different field, in a different resonance, especially the recently dead. And one of the approaches of the book is to get people to open to calling in their allies from all different sources, that you don't have to do this thing all alone. You don't have to turn around your life and your planet all by yourself. Even if you're living alone someplace in some isolated part of the world, you're not alone. You don't have to subscribe to that illusion of separateness, that you're totally separate from all other things and that the dead are totally separate from the living. And you get to call on the Aquarian age integrated circuitry that we are part of this, that we time share the universe with multiple layers of beings, worlds, and forces, many of which are willing to work with us and yearning to work with us once we get out of our own way and open to the possibilities.
Let's talk about the Open Communication Network.
The Open Communication Network, or OCN, is a switchboard, a galactic switchboard that is easier to tune into when a person is freed from the bombardment of rampant thought forms that happens in the modern time. It's easier to tune into this galactic switchboard late at night when everybody's sleeping, or in a kind of quiet rural place rather than in the midst of a city. And it's a bandwidth where you can hear the thought forms of other beings, where you can receive information from spiritual guides, where you can communicate with the ancestors or with others of the dead kingdoms, where you can tune into past lives, future lives, as well as other human beings in different parts of the world from you. It's a subtle bandwidth that, like a radio station, is always broadcasting. The only reason that that most people are unaware of this open communications network is because we've been conditioned to tune in to the more obvious and gross and distorted frequencies of a dying world culture that's in its end phase now. So things like AM radio and things like hyper-commercialized television, they steal the bandwidth. They broadcast on a huge frequency, whereas the open communications network that can be used to tune in to our spiritual allies is something that's happening on a subtler frequency, and so it takes a kind of a practice and an exercise to clear one's field of the psychic bombardment and to open an emptiness which can receive those other signals.
And, yeah, so you've talked about how we can do it, and it really is there to assist us to understand that we are all interconnected.
Yes. Hmm. Yes. And it's just a living network that, you know, Lori, when in 1995, my father was dying in a VA hospital in St. Petersburg, Florida. I was in an astrology class with Elias in Santa Cruz, California. And at the end of the class, my body started going into spasms, and I asked two of my classmates to come with me and sit in the back seat of my car to either side of me. And for 2 hours, my body spasmed. And at the end of that time, I was exhausted and drained. The next morning, my mother called and said, last night your father died after he spent 2 hours spasming.
Oh, wow.
And my body was tapping the open communications network and midwifing my father's death, absorbing some of the excess pain that he had to go through so there'd be a little less of it that he had to deal with on his way out. I did not know that consciously. I didn't realize that until after the fact, but some part of my body was absolutely tuned in to this open communications network.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I'm sure a lot of us have some experiences of that. And I guess, you know, whatever your natural sense is probably how you connect in with this open communication network.
Yes, some people are more inclined to be clairvoyant. They often see visions that sometimes come true or give them signals and information. Other people are more clairaudient, where they tend to hear things. And some people, like myself, are more clairsentient. I feel things. I sense things more than I generally see them or hear them. And each person has their own characteristic places where they're more sensitized and tuned in to these other frequencies.
Perfect. Let's talk about radical love.
Radical love is the purpose of the 2,000-year Piscean age that we've gone through. It is to awaken within us a self-affirmative love that enables us to fall in love with ourselves on such a deep level, far beyond ego. Not because we think we're God's greatest gift to humanity and everybody needs to bow down and worship us and we're the holy ones who know the right way that and everybody else has to follow us, but to fall in love on a much, much deeper level than that, in which the depth of this being that you are speaks so profoundly inside you that you awaken and 90 years of life seem far too short to be able to express that passion of what it means to be you, what it means to be alive, what it means to be filled with extraordinary soul gifts that you're just not used to looking at as gifts, because you've been trained by a false culture in its end stages, a dying and diseased culture. And so you've been taught not to recognize your greatest gifts, and you've been taught to put your soul and your dream on hold for some later time when you win the lottery, when you're no longer working your job. And it's an exact reversal of the actual state of existence. The actual your actual state is to be in love with life, with a radical force that just can't wait to find some new part of yourself to share, to give, to express, to be able to listen to someone else from such a deep, open part of yourself is an act of radical love. To say no to your best friend when everyone else is telling them yes, because you realize that they are giving in to pressure and taking the easy way out, and there's some deeper cut that you just cannot let them get away from, is an act of radical love. To come to stand for what you know in your heart and your soul is so true, that if there was one thing in your soul that if you get that one thing done, then it doesn't matter what else you do in this life, because you're going to die with a smile on your face. And if you do everything else in this life but not that one thing, you will die with a part of you withheld, a part of you unfulfilled. And find that one thing, which isn't just a thing, but a burning, an ignition, an awakening, to be that alive inside, that you're filled with an urgency to share, to express, to help, to give, to be that alive and trembling and opening and trusting and empowering all at once is this mixture of absolute strength with absolute surrender, just like a surfer. Absolute strength with absolute surrender to surf this Aquarian wave that's coming. That's radical love.
And how do we have that absolute surrender?
It takes a significant commitment to letting go of all parts of you that are holding yourself back on any level. You have to commit to releasing all your unconscious psychic contracts you signed to hold yourself back. I will hold myself back at work. I will hold myself back sexually. I will hold myself back romantically. I will hold myself back parentally. I will hold myself back. If you lifted the lid of human beings on earth, that's what you would hear. You would hear, I will hold myself back. Yes, I'm holding myself back. I'm going shopping and I'm holding myself back. I'm making love. I'm holding myself back. You have to commit to dismantling all that machinery, to ripping up those psychic contracts you unconsciously made to hold yourself back.
You also talk about closing the escape hatch, which... We really like our escape hatch.
Yes, it's a big one. It's a very, very big one. That we all have our characteristic back door in our brain the reason why I don't have to fully commit to being alive or fully commit to this relationship or fully commit to my child. We all have these stories in our head of why we fully can't be here and therefore don't quite even need to, because after all, who else is living that way? And it's not prudent and it's not wise and it's overly vulnerable to be that alive and to be that committed. And so in relationships especially, you can see the work of this escape hatch. It's kind of the it's on the order of that cliched version of the person who keeps their own apartment when they fall in love with someone else and moves in with the other person. But even though they're living with the other person, they don't give up their own apartment. Mm-hmm. And we haven't yet given up our apartments here, and we're all acting as if there's a better world. Like someday we will transcend this mess of the physical plane on earth and we'll make it to the Pleiades, where everything will be beautiful joy and white light and unicorns and rainbows and we will dance and frolic in the dew. And that whole version of history is what we're being asked to actually give up now and to relinquish, that there is no better place, that we're not going to get out of here, that we're not going to somehow raise our frequency and handle all our lessons and be elevated or graduated to someone else, but that whole idea itself is an escape, an escapism, that there's something here that is so worth fully being here for that we can close the escape hatches in the back of our mind, let go of our bachelor apartment on some other world like the Pleiades, and actually act as if this was the only option, that all we ever had was this, and it's this or nothing. And by closing the escape hatch, we challenge ourselves to mine the deeper gold of normalcy, of mundane earth life, rather than waltzing through it, numbing out, or taking it for granted.
Right. Yeah, it's a big one. I mean, this book talks about a lot of the really important things that we sort of need to be thinking about and to be understanding more deeply of what we do and how we do it and how to live our truth. I mean, it's a really good book.
Thank you, Lori. And yes, I strove to tackle the key, deepest challenges that human beings are up against right now as a way to catalyze a responsive force from the soul of readers that, yes, there is something so worthwhile about making it through the crazy mess of this moment of life on Earth. There is something so redemptive, transformative, resurrective about letting everything from before pass away and conjuring up something new to replace it with, that I tried my best to talk straight to the soul of readers. Look, this is what's going on, and this is what is so hard and intense about it, and here's some things we can do.
Right. So let's talk about part two, entering sacred space.
Yes.
You talk about how we receive our energy is linked to how we receive everything in our life. So love, sex, nurturance, support. And
yes.
That's important for us to understand and to see how we're doing that, because to enter sacred space, we need to be open. We need to be receptive. We need to allow it to come through us.
Yes. Yes. And the sacred space that we're referring to here is known to some of us who have been in altered states, who have taken medicine journeys, who have experienced powerful mystical transformations, moments during sacred lovemaking or during a time in nature where the veil between worlds disappears and a direct infusion of the beyond injects itself into your normal state of consciousness. That kind of sacred space intensifies the current modern human experience. So things are becoming extremely intense in this world. The most creative way to view that is as of the intensity of a teepee ceremony, sitting in the teepee, passing the sacred transforming medicine around. Many, many demons will get brought up through the course of the night. As you enter the depths of the medicine, the depths of the ceremony, with the fire in the dark of the night, which we're in now, yes, the demons are coming up. Yes, we are being pushed to the max, and it's not purposeless. It's actually for the purpose of initiation, so that we can enter this sacred space and recognize that the only things that we're losing now are the things that weren't capable of making it through the cusp of ages from Aquarius, from Pisces to Aquarius. We're letting go at the gate of dreams and relationships and ideas and illusions that have accompanied us to this point, but no farther.
Yeah. And so the shadow side is very much part of this, because we need to understand how both come together.
It's one of the greatest initiators, your shadow, which means whatever you most can't stand, whatever you most can't stand about yourself or your partner or your world, whatever is getting you, whatever, if just that one thing would ever go away, everything would be right. That is your greatest chance through the initiation. the shadow as the initiator rather than the shadow as the ultimate arbiter of your fate. Your shadow is there to draw you into a much deeper, transformed version that who you were before was always trying to get to, but needed some further intensity, like a real kick-ass spiritual master, to have to force you to go through it.
And you talk about in this chapter, or this section, about how our personal resistance comes up, which is part of our shadow, but it's also, you know, this part of us that feels we can't or won't, or, you know, that part of us that wants to escape. But there's also the collective resistance.
Yes, and both needed to be addressed here in this book, because at a time like this, one of the key hallmarks of our current time is that it's not just that each human being goes through the normal share of intensities. At some time in everybody's life, things are very, very intense. Goes without saying. But what's happening now at the cusp of ages in our world, similar to what was happening back around the time of Christ, which was the previous cusp of ages, what's happening now is that mass humanity as a whole is also going through its most intense growing pains and initiation. So it's no longer just Lori Houston or Mark Borax going through their own personal mania in order to try and become a better version of themselves. It's also the collective itself is absolutely in the depths of death and rebirth. And some parts of the collective identify much more strongly with the death part of that, and some parts are beginning to identify now with the rebirth.
Let's talk about karma.
Karma is the greatest instrument that we have for transformation. Karma has nothing to do with good or bad. Karma is a force of physics, just like gravity, just like high and low tides. Are high and low tides good, or are they bad? Is gravity really, really good? Is it bad? It just is. Karma is. Karma results from the actions we took or failed to take in earlier lives. That's one main source of karma. And that creates a pattern where we've gone characteristically unconscious, each of us in our own way. We keep recreating insufficient results based on some unconscious part of us, our thought forms and our emotions. Karma comes back to remind us, hey, psst, Lori, wake up. Wake up over there. Hey, Mark Borax, wake up. Wake up. Karma comes back to give us the summons to become awake in the very place where we've been least awake over and over and over. So when karma comes back, it's this invitation to find something new inside something old, to realize that every negative pattern you've gotten caught in was not somehow separate from the grand design. It was still integrated fully into the spiritual design of the universe, and therefore, the places where you've most stumbled and gone off track are actually capable of steering you more firmly on track than any other part of your life. That's the definition of karma, and the book elaborates at great length as to how to actually do that.
Yeah, it's intense. All of it is, you know, a perfect handbook to assist us to understand, you know, what we're going through and to help us. It's almost like it gives us a hand to realize that there is a rainbow at the end of the tunnel, or there is something that can give us hope to know that when we do go through these, I don't even know what to call them sometimes, but these, you know, intense struggles or intense challenges, that there, you know, there is reason, and it's all, you know, perfectly divine.
Well, the book's title, Cosmic Weather Report, has a subtitle, Notes from the Edge of the Universe, and a reading line, Guidance for Radically Changing Times, and the picture on the cover shows this very, very heavy sky with this brilliant illumination shooting out and producing a wave and some stars in the background. And that's exactly what I feel about our time. And I labored to create a guidebook to give human beings the inspiration, the enthusiasm, the catalyst to face whatever it is you have to face with a magical and a strong force that can help you get through it.
Right. Well, we are going to have another show. It will be on my CBS station, and it will be in March. And we'll probably maybe go into part three a bit more because we didn't get a chance to. But before we end tonight's show, let's talk about part three, and that it's the incredible, impossible, marvelous dance of our times. But really, a bit that I thought was quite brilliant was, you know, we want to be in control of everything, but spirit is in charge.
Yes, and that eternal truth that you are not in control of your life, that there are much stronger forces than you who have written your story into the grand design, but you have the power to work in accordance with that design or to burn yourself out fighting against it. You cannot decide the course of the river. The river will start in the mountain and it will end at the sea. It will flow downstream. You can exhaust yourself trying to swim against it upstream, or you can flow with the current. So too with life, there's a spiritual force that you're a part of, and the more that you learn to work with it, the more you take the craziness and the contradiction and the paradox, and you laugh with it, and you sing with it, and you love out of it.
Well, Mark, again, a wonderful interview, a wonderful book. I definitely encourage everybody to get it. In case you haven't gotten the title, it is Cosmic Weather Report, Notes from the Edge of the Universe, and again, the subtitle of Guidance for Radically Changing Times, written by Mark Borax and Elias Lonsdale. I recommend it highly because I really think it just touches on some really deep points that we just need to be more aware of.
Thank you, Lori. And people can get it on my website, which is markborax.com.
Okay. Do you have, I know that part of this book, or most of this book, was written actually because you were doing teleclasses. Do you have any more that are coming up?
We do. We have teleclasses coming up in March, and it's going to be three Cosmic Weather Report teleclasses that Elias Lonsdale is going to teach, and I'm going to moderate. And people go to my website, they can find out about that and register.
There you go. It sounded like those three classes must have been incredibly powerful classes, which I am.
Yeah. I had no idea that I was going to get a book out of it, but it hit me so hard that I had to just create.
Awesome. Well, and a book that you well created. So thank you.
Thank you, Lori.
All right.